This is VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. U.S. President Joe Biden has arrived in Spain ahead of NATO's summit Wednesday's NATO summit in Madrid, where he said he expects members of the alliance will maintain their strong support for Ukraine in its war with Russia. Speaking at a joint news conference with Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, Biden, who is looking to encourage any wavering NATO members, said that NATO allies remain committed to supporting Ukraine.
NATO is focused on all directions and domains, land, air, and sea. And, Mr. President, we also discussed how the United States and Spain and other allies are keeping needed weapons and equipment flowing to Ukraine. So they're standing up in ways that I don't think anyone anticipated, showing enormous bravery, enormous resolve. And we're continuing to tighten sanctions on Russia as well.
Sanchez says Putin's invasion of Ukraine in February represents a violation of international law and said Putin's actions confirm Spain's support for a rules-based international order. Meanwhile, Ukrainian officials reported Tuesday Russia targeted more Ukrainian civilian sites with missiles a day after a deadly strike on a shopping center in the city of Kremenchuk killed at least 18 people. The officials said the new Russian attacks killed at least 8 civilians in strikes on the southern Ukrainian port city of Mykolaiv and the northeastern region near Kharkiv, the country's second largest city. Among those killed was a 6-year-old girl, while dozens were injured, including a 3-month-old baby left in a coma. A Mykolaiv regional military administrator said Russia launched at least 11 missiles on targets in the region, with some missiles shot down by Ukrainian air defenses. This is VOA News. Police in the U.S. southwestern state of Texas now say at least 50 migrants are dead after being found in a tractor trailer abandoned on a road near San Antonio. Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The tractor trailer had been abandoned on a back road in San Antonio. Police Chief William McManus says a worker in a nearby building made the discovery.
Heard a cry for help, came out to investigate, found a trailer with the doors partially open.
Fire Chief Charles Hood says 46 people inside were already dead, 12 adults and 4 children taken to hospitals.
The patients that we saw were hot to the touch. They were suffering from heat stroke, heat exhaustion, no signs of water in the vehicle.
4 of those taken to hospital later died. San Antonio Mayor Ron Nirenberg.
This is nothing short of a horrific human tragedy.
Sound courtesy KSAT. I'm Ben Thomas.
The U.S. House Congressional Panel investigating the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol is hearing testimony Tuesday from Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to former U.S. President Donald Trump's Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows. Hutchinson was privy to key White House conversations as Trump sought to reverse his 2020 election loss. Hutchinson's testimony has been shrouded in secrecy, and the hearing itself came as a surprise, as Congress is in the midst of a 2-week recess, and the committee was not expected to meet again until July. Committee staff had declined to publicly identify Hutchinson, saying only that a hearing would be held to present recently obtained evidence. The committee had previously shown parts of Hutchinson's videotaped testimony from 3 private depositions she gave to the committee's investigators. The committee has been conducting closed hearings and its investigation for almost a year, but their first public meetings began about 3 weeks ago. The U.S. State Department announced Tuesday the U.S. will provide nearly $55 million in immediate humanitarian assistance to those affected by last week's powerful earthquake in southeastern Afghanistan. In a release, the State Department said the funds will be delivered through the U.S. Agency for International Development and will provide food, clothing, cooking utensils, blankets, water cans, and sanitation supplies to prevent waterborne diseases in the disaster-hit areas. The State Department said the U.S. has been the largest humanitarian donor to Afghanistan, and with these latest funds, they'll have committed more than $774 million in humanitarian assistance over the past year alone. The U.S. announcement came only a day after the United Nations appealed to the global community for more than $110 million in urgent humanitarian response to some 360,000 Afghans impacted by last week's earthquake. Repeating the hour's top news story, U.S. President Joe Biden has arrived in Spain ahead of Wednesday's NATO summit in Madrid. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. This.
V. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Uhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
When you hear that there was one door for exit, how does that happen? What kind of community consultations could have happened?
That's Bishop Malusi Mpumlwana in South Africa expressing frustration at conditions that contributed to the death of 21 teenagers. Details coming up. Also, the Nigerian High Court has rejected a second application for bail from separatist leader Nnamdi Kanu. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nigerian churches are introducing armed security and entry searches after a deadly June 5th attack on a Catholic church blamed on the Islamic State in West Africa province, ISWAP. Security experts fear the attack in Nigeria's southwest Ondo State means the threat of terrorism is spreading and could soon reach the capital. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
One by one, worshippers are screened at Dominion Chapel in Abuja before they're allowed into the premises for the service. Church security guards and state police officers conduct the searches. The church is one of many boosting security measures following a brutal attack on a Catholic church in southwest Nigeria in early June. Abuja's police said they have often deployed officers to churches, mosques, and public places, but not all public spaces have seen this level of security. Bishop John Praise Daniel is the presiding pastor of Dominion Chapel.
These days, people just become crazy and going to churches and start shooting. So I think the church will get to that level of arming themselves, you know, against any attack that will come. And that is self-defense. And there is no law against self-defense.
On June 5th, heavily armed men invaded St. Francis Catholic Church in the southwest city of Owo and killed 40 worshippers using guns and explosives. 87 people survived but suffered serious injuries. Some of them described the attack as, quote, unimaginable horror. Stephen Chukwu Okonye survived a bullet to his chest.
For such a situation to have occurred, for such incidents to have occurred, lasted for more than 20 minutes, and the police did not reinforce. There was no police presence, no military presence. It means there is no security in this country. So security is one area the government has to look into.
Nigerian authorities blamed the Islamic State of West African province, or ISWAP, for the shooting, but some experts say that was a hasty conclusion. Experts also say the attack was an indication that terrorism is spreading in Nigeria. Last week, gunmen in the Kajuru area of the northern Kaduna state attacked two churches, killed three people, and kidnapped 36 others. On Sunday, gunmen killed two clergymen in separate attacks in Kaduna and Edo states. The Christian Association of Nigeria, CAN, raised concerns about the attacks, criticized authorities for lack of protection, and urged church authorities to take stronger security measures. Joseph Daramola is the general secretary of CAN.
The church as a whole should be security conscious and they be prepared. And the next person to you is a suspect.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari promised to address general insecurity and boost Nigeria's economy when he first won office in 2015. But as his second and final term comes to an end, gruesome attacks like the one in Owo will be remembered as the country prepares for next year's elections. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Nigeria's High Court rejected a second application for bail from separatist leader Nnamdi Kanu and ordered him to face trial on November 14th on charges of terrorism and broadcasting falsehoods. Reuters News reports that Kanu, a British citizen, was first refused bail in March after his arrest last year, after years on the run. Kanu, who is in jail awaiting trial and denies the charges against him, founded the Indigenous People of Biafra, IPOB, in 2014. The group has been pressing for the secession of a part of southeast Nigeria, where the majority of the population belongs to the Igbo ethnic group. Authorities, however, view IPOB as a terrorist group and blames it on a spate of killings and attacks on government buildings in the southeast. IPOB says it wants to achieve independence through non-violent means. Villagers in a western Cameroon town bordering Nigeria say armed men carried out a series of attacks over the weekend, killing about 30 people, including Nigerians. Community leaders in the town of Akwaya say one of the two communities fighting over land hired separatist fighters to carry out the shootings, which the rebels deny. Moke Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Community leaders say the intercommunal attacks from June 25 to 27 in Akwaya killed at least 30 people, including five Nigerian business people, and forced hundreds to flee the violence. Eno Daniel Kewong is the highest-ranking government health official in Akwaya on the border with Nigeria. He spoke to VOA via messaging app.
Since the incident was very horrific, we never had the courage to go to the field. So the injured were actually transported by relatives and villagers to the Presbyterian Health Center, where we attended to them. Most of the people that were brought had severe head injury, chest injuries, while a few had minor injuries. The severe injuries, we tried to stabilize them and refer them to neighboring Nigeria for continuation of care.
Cameroon Presbyterian Church official Samuel Funke says an unknown number of the injured died while being evacuated to Nigeria. VOA could not independently verify if any injured from the attack arrived at Nigerian hospitals. Funke says the ethnic Oliti accused the Mesaga Ekol people of hiring rebel fighters to carry out the attacks to try to force them from their land. Separatists denied they were responsible for the Akwaya killings and blamed unnamed armed groups operating across the border. Funke says he was trying to organize peace talks between the two communities to end the violence when the weekend attacks occurred.
We're planning on how we can have peace talks to end the matter. And then this unfortunate incident took place where 30 people, including children, women, young girls, men, and the old, were massacred with support from some armed men. Some were even burnt in their houses. We want to plead that government should put a very strong military base in Akwaya, since that area is also near Nigeria.
Cameroon's government said troops have been deployed to protect civilians in Akwaya, but gave no further details. The intercommunal violence along the Nigerian border first broke out in April when villagers say at least seven people were killed and plantations were destroyed. Local clerics, community leaders, and village chiefs called a meeting to seek a solution to the conflict, but the disputing sides refused to attend. The allegation of rebels being hired guns will likely complicate peace efforts. English-speaking separatists in western Cameroon launched an armed rebellion in 2017 to break away from the country and its French-speaking majority. The government has blamed them for most atrocities committed in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions, while the rebels usually blame federal troops. The UN says the conflict has killed more than 3,300 people and displaced more than 750,000. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
8 people in eastern Burkina Faso have been killed in an attack by suspected Islamist militants on a baptism party. The French news agency AFP reports, a security source says, the attack in the village of Sandiaga in Colpelgo province left 8 civilians dead. AFP says a local resident confirmed the toll and said armed men burst into a baptism ceremony on Monday and opened fire. On Sunday, 6 people died and 2 were injured in 2 villages in the northern province of Bam when carts carrying women were hit by roadside bombs, another security source said. The landlocked Sahel state, one of the world's poorest countries, is in the grip of a nearly 7-year-old Islamist insurgency. Moroccan authorities have begun prosecuting 65 migrants who joined Friday's mass attempt to cross into a Spanish enclave by storming a border post. The incident led to the death of more than 25 migrants. Several news organizations showed videos of what appeared to be harsh treatment from Moroccan security forces on black African migrants. VOA could not verify the authenticity of the videos. Iskender Nagash is president and chief executive officer of U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants. Douglas Mpuga reached him in Virginia for a reaction on this development.
Well, it's a sad situation, but this is not the first time. We have hundreds of Africans that are dying and trying to cross to Europe, you know, from Libya and to go to Italy. We have seen horror, you know, 300 something Eritreans who died, and it's just becoming an ongoing tragedy that we are seeing, you know, Africans, refugees and immigrants trying to enter to Europe. So this is another horrible tragedy that we're seeing. Yeah,
the route through Morocco to Spain has not been very popular among migrants from Africa. What do you think? Have they discovered a new way?
Well, maybe, I mean, but it has been. I mean, they, you know, there are some going, but the number may not be that high. But, you know, but it has been. I mean, keep in mind, you know, they're trying to go through Morocco, trying to go through Libya, trying to go through Egypt. Some of them died in the Sahara Desert, trying to get to Israel. So it is. An ongoing challenge that we see in the days, and you know, the kidnapping and the trafficking, the beheading of African refugees is becoming, unfortunately, normal. You know,
and we've heard of degrading and inhumane treatment of some of them, leading to deaths of others. And it appears both governments of Morocco and Spain are not doing enough to explain what actually happened.
Yeah, as I said, you know, over 3,000 migrants died, you know, in 2021. You know, this is according to UN. I'm not making it up. But they're not giving them, you know, protection as required by international law. And they died in a horrible date, and sometimes their identity is not known because they have this rigid system where nobody is allowed to come. Well, I think, you know, this is an ongoing crisis. I think the international community has to do something about it. The number is going to go up, you know, because of the crisis in different parts of the country. You know, wars are everywhere, from Chad to Ethiopia to, you know, to Somalia and other places. So the number of this migration, refugee migration, is going to continue. And the sad thing is some of those are dying are also children and women. So this is a sad story, and the international media is not giving it due attention.
That's Iskender Nagash, President and Chief Executive Officer of U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants. He was speaking to VOA's Douglas Mpuga. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Iheyes Wuhib in Washington. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. A Senegal court Tuesday handed an opposition member of parliament a six-month suspended prison sentence and released another lawmaker for defying a ban on protests in the tense run-up to legislative elections. MPs Detti Fall and Mame Diare Fame were tried along with 82 other defendants at the court in the capital, Dakar. They were arrested on June 17th during a rally the opposition called after its list of candidates for the elections were disqualified on technical grounds. Authorities had banned the rally, citing the risk of unrest. Fall, the main organizer of the demonstration, was given a six-month suspended sentence and fined about $160. In a 14-hour trial, court president Ahmed Ba dismissed the case against Fame, saying the facts against her had not been sufficiently established. Ba also acquitted the other 82 co-defendants due to insufficient established facts. In South Africa, medical examiners have finished the autopsies and the bodies of 21 teenagers who died in a tavern early Sunday morning. Health department officials in the coastal city of East London have told VOA they'll be able to determine what caused the deaths after forensic samples have been analyzed. The victims were aged between 13 and 17, so the tragedy has sparked intense debate about the problem of underage drinking in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Speaking on state television, Police Minister Becky Cele said the teenagers died as they danced. He added that the victims began collapsing shortly after 2 a.m. as they celebrated the beginning of school holidays. Others were celebrating a birthday. Photos and videos on social media show bodies strewn across the floor of the tavern. Others lie on tables and couches. A DJ who survived the incident, Brian Mapasa, told VOA someone sprayed gas or something into the air inside the bar. He said this caused panic and people stampeded toward the front door, the only entrance and exit point. But Mapasa explained the door was shut solid. He thinks by security guards, unaware of what was happening inside and trying to prevent another crowd of youngsters from surging into the jam-packed establishment. Mapasa recalled he suddenly couldn't breathe and lost consciousness, waking up a few minutes later on the ground near the tavern, rescued by friends. Eastern Cape Community Safety Minister Weziwe Gotiwe says she's absolutely certain none of the victims was crushed to death, as initially reported.
What makes us to say there was no stampede is that there were three young people who came from the community who fainted when they were brought to us. One of those died on her way to the hospital. It means, therefore, what they ate or inhaled there was within their bodies. Hence, we are saying we are taking out the issue of stampede. We will wait for the results to come and we'll be able to pronounce on the result on what really had happened there.
Otiwe says Mapasa isn't the only witness to claim that someone sprayed a substance into the air as people partied. Health department officials say some of the survivors are being treated in hospital for intense body pains, including headaches and backaches, and continue to vomit sporadically. South African Council of Churches General Secretary Bishop Malusi Mpulwana says the tavern tragedy shows the country's becoming increasingly immoral.
These were school children for whom a celebration of a birthday means a party at a shebeen. And not only that, we have got a culture of lawlessness.
He points out that the tavern, or shebeen, had a license to operate, which should mean it was inspected thoroughly by the liquor board. But he says this obviously didn't happen.
When you hear that there was one door for exit, how does that happen? What kind of community consultations could have happened that you should have a shebeen in the midst of a community in this way? These challenges of shebeens in communities, where is the zoning system? We've got a lot of these problems in this country where somebody can just open a business without question. As long as I want to have my profits, I'll set up a business of whatever nature. It's happening,
Whereas
Mpuana says the government should invest as much money in anti-alcohol abuse programs as it claims it does in business initiatives, some of which fund township taverns. Relatives of victims are demanding justice. Police are guarding the bar following threats by the community to burn it to the ground. The police say the owners and managers of the tavern are cooperating with their investigation, but no arrests have been made yet. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Sudan has recalled its ambassador in Addis Ababa to protest what it says was the execution by Ethiopian forces of 7 Sudanese soldiers and a civilian who were captured last week. Ethiopia's foreign ministry has said the facts of the incident were misrepresented and that the deaths were a result of a skirmish between Sudanese soldiers who they said had encroached onto Ethiopian land and a local militia. And Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, visited the area yesterday where he said his government would not allow new movements or trespasses into Sudanese land. Cameron Hudson, a senior associate at Center for Strategic and International Studies, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
We need some official confirmation of what exactly has happened. I think that certainly the Sudanese are in a position where these claims are quite concerning. But let's be honest, neither side in Sudan or Ethiopia have demonstrated that they are good actors right now or that their statements can be believed. We've seen this in the Ethiopian war in Tigray and certainly with respect to the Sudan military's continued atrocities against civilian protesters. Protesters and in Darfur, where they've denied responsibility. So you have essentially two armed groups squared off in this disputed area, and really neither of them have a track record to be believed. And so I think we do need some independent confirmation about not just what has happened in this incident, but what is the disposition of forces in this area, and making an assessment about what needs to be done to help mediate the crisis there.
Sudan's military ruler, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, flew to his country's eastern region close to Ethiopia's border. Sudan said it intends to file a complaint against Ethiopia to the UN Security Council and relevant regional and international organizations. How significant are these actions?
Well, they're potentially very significant, but again, I think we have to look at what General Burhan is doing. Here's a leader right now who's lost a lot of legitimacy and credibility given the domestic events unfolding inside Sudan. And so an attack of this nature really dovetails with the argument that he and the rest of the military in Sudan have been making for some time, which is this is a dangerous neighborhood, requires military leaders in charge of Sudan to ensure security for the country. And so they are, you know, demonstrating that they are up to this challenge. They are trying to, again, build back credibility by going through legitimate international organizations to seek redress. So you can see that there is some amount of posturing going on here by the Sudanese military. Whether or not this attack happens to be true or not, they're using it, I think, to bolster their own legitimacy and their own image internationally and domestically.
The border dispute between Sudan and Ethiopia over the fertile land in the vast Al-Fashaga region in eastern Sudan has been a major and long-standing stumbling block. This border dispute is fueling tensions between the two countries, which despite numerous rounds of negotiations have never yet reached an agreement on the demarcation of their border. What's the way out?
Well, I think the way out is the way back to the status quo before the conflict began, which was essentially viewing this as a soft border. You know, this is a largely agricultural area. I think what we have seen is in recent times, very powerful business interests in Sudan moving into this area, trying to commercialize and mechanize the agriculture in this area, which for a very long time has seen Ethiopian and Sudanese farmers mixing very peacefully. Again, this was subsistence level agriculture. It was not large scale commercial farming. I think as you've introduced more complicated and politically powerful business interests into this area, that is where we have seen the military become involved and complications arise. So I really do think that we need to go back to a kind of a soft border arrangement with some kind of understanding of how this territory will be treated.
That was Carmen Hudson, a senior associate at Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was speaking to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producers, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdelrahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.